Family.
Good to see all of you here this morning. Glad to see so many visitors here this morning. If you haven't had a chance to fill out one of those cards that's on the back of the pew in front of you, we'd encourage you to do so. Don't walk around with it in between your teeth or anything. Just give it to anybody that you saw up front here this morning serving and helping, and we'll get that to where it needs to be. Chris made a oblique mention, but a mention nonetheless of Gemma's birth while we were celebrating and commemorating the birth of Charlie and Layla. I'm thankful for all of the births that we're seeing happening right now, whether it be a physical birth or a spiritual birth. I think that each of us has a part in that and responsibility to figure out how we're going to help and do through all of that. One thing that I want to get into before we look at some body life issues was we had an opportunity this morning to pray for one of our brothers, several of our brothers actually, in Bible class here in the auditorium, as George Nolan made confession at the end of class this morning. He's struggling. He's not living the life that he knows God is calling him to live and not being the Christian that God wants him to be. Several of us jumped on board in that confession this morning. And so keep him in your prayers. Keep all of us in your prayers as we live the life that God wants us to live. Some announcements. There is a fellowship hall refrigerator clean out. Everything must go. And not to insult your intelligence, but eat it or take it with you, but it's going to go in the trash one way or the other if you don't come and get it. It needs to get emptied out. We have some anticipation of need for the refrigerator for the 85th anniversary next weekend. We're actually asking that all of that be done by Wednesday the 29th. So if you have something in that fridge that is calling to you and it's yours, I don't care how green it is and whether or not it's supposed to be green, we ask that you take care of that in preparation for the 85th. This Saturday morning is our second Rise Up Men's Study at 7 a.m. We will eat breakfast, and then we'll spend some time in study and discussion afterward. I am making a promise to each of you men here this morning. I promise to be here on time for that. You know it's bad when Hunter and Austin beat you to something. And when it's Hunter texting you, hey, where are you at? But that's coming up this Saturday. And also this Saturday, we begin our 85th anniversary celebration. If you have been looking forward to that and getting tired of Jeremy talking about it, the end is nigh. On the 2nd, we plan on serving lunch from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All that is required is you show up and eat it. We've got that catered in from Barbecue West. I hear that it's fantastic and looking forward to that. From 1 to 4, we're just going to spend some time in fellowship, sharing memories, looking at some of the memories that have gone on over the last 85 years as we look at the past and bring us up to date to the present. Sunday, we will spend, as our normal schedule allows, with 9 o'clock Coffee and Connect, 9:30 Bible class. And then our 10:30 worship hour, we will spend looking forward. It's great that we know what our history is, but we can't sit there and just rest and be dependent on what we did. We need to be looking at what we're doing and where we're going. And that's going to be the focus of that Sunday morning worship. And then we'll spend time in potluck meal afterward. Please plan accordingly for that as we spend that time together. Then immediately following that potluck, we'll meet back here in the auditorium, and our youth, young men youth, are going to be leading us in a Devo that afternoon to round off the weekend. VBS registration is open. You may go online and register your child at the website, getting them signed up for that. This is going to be Wednesday through Saturday, July 13th through the 16th. Wednesday through Friday will be an evening time period from 5:30 to 8, and Saturday will be 9 to 1. We're going to serve supper nightly and lunch on Saturday. So here's the deal. If you're an adult, please RSVP with the office to let them know, to let us know that you're going to be eating a meal on any of those nights or day so that Karen has enough numbers and planning ahead of time to make sure that we can feed everyone that is there. We had previously announced that this week would be your pew pickup period, but knowing how the world works and how things never go according to plan, unless it's God and he's the one that sets that plan up, that time period has been rescinded, and now the new time period will be determined once we figure out when everything is going to get delivered. Life groups are going to begin August 14th. We ask that you sign up on the sign-up sheet in the back by July 17th so that we can get the group set up, let the leaders know what's going on, and then they can get in touch with you. And that's what we've got going on for Body Life. If you hadn't figured out it's summer, this should tell you. We have a ton of stuff going on and been going on with everything that's happening. Open up your Bibles to Nehemiah chapter 4. Excuse me. I want to encourage you. You have 2 weeks now, not normal week, but 2 weeks since we're going to take a break from Nehemiah next week for the 85th to read through Nehemiah chapter 5. If you haven't done that or you've fallen a little bit behind, that's okay. Play catch up this week. Read the five chapters. It's not that hard. That comes out to a chapter a day. And again, just as a piece of information for you, you can't read Nehemiah 1 five times in that count. That breaks Bud's heart every time I say that. Read chapter 1 through chapter 5 in preparation for two weeks from now. When I was in the Marine Corps, there were two things that solved every problem. That if you had a problem or something was broken or you just didn't know what to do, there were two things that were the most dynamic thing that you could think of to solve that problem. The first was water, and the second was Motrin. Okay? Water and Motrin would solve everyone's problem all the time. Your knee hurt? Take some Motrin. Drink some water. You broke your machine gun? Drink some water. Take some Motrin. It didn't matter. Those were the things that solved everything. And usually what was followed up is if you had a complaint about something, the person above you would always say, hey, drink water, take Motrin, and BJ, do you know what it was? Suck it up. Right? Anybody ever heard that phrase, suck it up? Been told, suck it up? You ever stop to think about what that phrase actually means? Oftentimes, I think we hear that phrase and somebody tells us to suck it up, and we're like, man, he's just calling me a whiner and a baby. Yeah, probably, but that's not really what they're trying to say. What they're trying to tell you in reality is that there's problems. There's always problems. Be realistic about it, acknowledge it, and just move on through it. You don't have to make it more difficult than what it already is. And it reflects the reality that life is hard. There's going to be challenges that are out there and times when you got to pull your big boy pants up and do what needs to be done. Yes, ladies, you also need to pull your big girl pants up on that. Because I saw some of the ladies going, whew, I'm so glad he's preaching to the men today. Last we left Nehemiah, construction has begun on the wall around Jerusalem. We talked about last week, everyone chipping in so that the job could be accomplished. It didn't matter if you were a perfumer, your new job was wall builder. Everyone understood the importance of it. They understood that this was God's plan, and so they got on board with it. No complaints, none of those things were going on, and it was a big job that they had to do. And by the time we hit Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6, we read, so we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. So not only is everybody chipping in on this thing, the work is getting done. Isn't that amazing? That when everybody has a mind to it and everybody puts their hands to it, things get done. They're not relying on one or two people to do all of it. Everybody is engaged in this. And up to this point, up to this point, the enemies of Nehemiah and the people have been all talk. All right, I'm going to read through some verses here, and what I want you to imagine is a chihuahua. Everybody knows what a chihuahua is, right? Chihuahuas are those little dogs that all they can say is, and real quick, who's afraid of a chihuahua? No one. You know why? Because your foot is usually bigger than the chihuahua. Okay, so look at everything that these enemies of the people are saying to about the work that's going on. If you look at chapter 4, verse 3, even what they're building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break this stone wall down. Okay, and then you get down to verse 8, all of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. You get into 11, our enemy said, they will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work. Now understand that these individuals, this is Sanballat, he hears about the rebuilding of the wall and he is not happy about it. In fact, when we go back to chapter 2, we see he has a problem. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? So they're just creating problems and whining and complaining the whole time. Okay? This is classic bullying behavior. Look at the first three verses of chapter 4. When it came about, when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. He spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?" All he is doing here is trying to look and sound bigger than what he actually is. Okay? And that's really all a bully does, right? They try and promote fear in your mind so that you think they can accomplish something that they really can't. They're just barking dogs, man. That's all they are, little chihuahuas. God's power is proven to be bigger than the dog's bark. Because when you get down to verse 14, and we see everything that's happening, when I saw their fear, this is Nehemiah, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, your houses. All of this barking has led to a huge discouragement in the people. They're being afraid. Right, and you can imagine Sanballat and his ilk just sitting back, just kind of smiling and laughing because they're accomplishing what they want to accomplish. They're so discouraged that in Judah it was said that the strength of the burden bearers is failing. There's rubble. We ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. Where they were was everybody had a mind to work. They've got it half done, guys. Now all of a sudden they can't finish it. They can't figure out why they can't finish it. They're not going to be able to rebuild everything. And yeah, it's big work, okay? Nobody's going to go building a wall around Jerusalem and it's going to be something small. And Nehemiah even says that it's a big job. He acknowledges the truth of it. He says, yeah, okay, it's a big job. And there are enemies who are barking. They're looking for a chance to bite. And yes, you're tired. Yes, you're overwhelmed. But God is great. And when we read that word great, let's imagine the most magnitudinous, intense thing that we could ever imagine in our minds, okay? So loud that nothing can drown him out. So great of importance that there is no one greater. He is great. He is terror-inspiring. Because you guys know that's what the word awesome actually means. He inspires fear, true terror. This is the God who, by the way, put it into my heart and mind to accomplish this job, which you all thought was fantastic and put your minds to it as well. It's real. The job is real. The problems are real. But to quote Paul, Nehemiah basically tells the people, if God is for us, who stands against us? And the question that Nehemiah poses to us and to the people is, who has the power to accomplish what they promised? Our enemies or God? Who can actually do these things? You know, in many ways, Nehemiah is not leading a fight against. I got all jacked up here. Here we go. In many ways, Nehemiah is not fighting against just the physical enemies that are going on here. He's waging war against a defeatist attitude. And if we're honest about how we live life, when things are going great, do we feel like we're defeated? No. We put our mind to it, we put our hands to it, and everything's going great. But the minute challenges come up, and maybe they even seem insurmountable, guys, how quickly do we embrace a defeatist attitude? How quickly do we say, oh, it just can't be done? It's impossible. And Nehemiah addresses that very enemy among the people. And this is, it's understandable. Right? Because for almost 100 years, these folks have lived a life of subservience. That's all they know. Generations have been treated the way we see the Jewish people being treated in Nehemiah. This is what they're used to. It's what is. But if progress is going to be made physically, mentally, and spiritually, the people need re-education. They have to learn what God can actually accomplish, right? You look at Isaiah chapter 8, starting in verse 10. Prophet writes, devise a plan, it'll be thwarted. State a proposal, it will not stand, for God is with us. For thus the Lord spoke to me with mighty power and instructed me not to walk in the way of this people, saying, you're not to say it's a conspiracy in regard to all that this people call a conspiracy. You are not to fear what they fear or be in dread of it. Don't be afraid of what the bully is afraid of. Don't be afraid of what everybody else is afraid of. Be afraid of God. He deserves it. Okay? He continues, he says, it is the Lord of hosts whom you should regard as holy. He will be your fear. He will be your dread. He is awe-inspiring. He is terror-inspiring. And who will stand in the way of his purpose? Who is going to actually stop what he wants done? Who has the power to fulfill their promise? God or the enemy? And look at the reaction. When the people embrace this re-education process, look at the reaction in Nehemiah 4. He says, when our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, then all of us returned to the wall, each one to his work. The enemy's plan crumbles and God's plan is promoted. But all it took was them to rearrange their thinking and see things the way God wants them to see things. And what I find highly encouraging about this chapter is, man, wouldn't it have been easy for God to say, all right, Nehemiah, I get it, buddy. You got some serious problems here. This Sambalot character, you know what? He needs to get taken care of. And so I have the perfect plan for this. Lightning bolt. We're just going to deal with these dudes in some miraculous way where they, you know, they're eaten alive by worms or, you know, maybe their flesh falls off and they're just going to be dealt with in a miraculous way. You don't need to worry about this. I got it. Well, we don't see God doing that at all here. There's no miraculous intervention in Nehemiah chapter 4. Did you notice that? But what we do see happening is God simply empowering his people to do the work that he's called them to do. And you know what that empowering looked like? It was them having a sword in one hand and a bucket in the other. They armed themselves while they were building. And isn't it funny? All of a sudden, the bully just can't do anything now. Being on the lookout for the enemy's plans, seeing what they were trying to do. And so what we see being presented to us in the chapter is that there is a responsibility of the people that they take upon themselves to accomplish God's purpose. But what we also see is that this is what God expects of his people. When we began talking about Nehemiah, I mentioned the difference between optimism and realism, you guys remember? And how I had said that a realist acknowledges challenges that are going to come before him. And one of life's realities is this. As God's people, we will always be challenged by enemies. That's just a reality. Now, depending on our mindset, and depending on how we view God, that may or may not lead us to discouragement. But as God's children, are we recognizing that the battle has already been won before it's even started? Do we believe that the God we serve is just as great and awesome today as he was when Nehemiah said he is great and awesome? Do we believe that God has the power to fulfill his promises, or do we believe that the enemy has the power to fulfill their promises? You see the difference in that? You guys are smart enough to follow each one of those down to its logical conclusion and see where it takes you. God has empowered us, just as he did the people in Jerusalem, to accomplish the task of living for him. And we can't forget that while we're operating on a battlefield, and as soldiers, we have duties to perform. Paul reminds us of this in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Right? He says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we don't war according to the flesh," or if we were to paraphrase Isaiah, we don't do things the way everybody does things. We don't fear things the way that they fear things. "For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful." You know why they're divinely powerful? Why they can destroy fortresses? Why he's going to be able to go into these things? Because God is great and awesome. Divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations. We're destroying every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. We are taking every thought in our own lives captive to the obedience of Christ, and we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. We have a responsibility on the battlefield not to fight the way everybody else fights, but to fight the way that God calls us to fight, through his power, through his might, based on our faith in his promises and what he has accomplished for us. But we've also got to be alert. We need to watch for the enemy. We need to see that when the enemy is coming for us individually, when the enemy is coming for us as a church, when the enemy is coming for us as a city, as a state, as a nation, as in the world, we need to be watching for the enemy. We need to know the enemy's tactics. And we never engage in those tactics. We need to be alert that while the enemy may not choose to attack us, he may choose to attack our brother and sister. And we have to be ready to rush to their aid. And guys, it's not going to do us any good to be alert and to understand the responsibilities of the battlefield if we go into it unarmed. Anyone who goes into battle unarmed is defeated. Nehemiah teaches us the truth. Life is hard. Let's not make it any harder by being unmindful of the truths that God presents to us about life. Maybe it's just all we need is some re-education, right? Maybe we've forgotten how great and awesome God is. And we need the re-education, we need re-educated. We need help from our brothers and sisters in remembering and being taught who God actually is and how powerful he is. Or maybe you just need to pick up a weapon and get on the wall. Whatever it is that you need this morning, know with utmost certainty that God is ready to provide. That the salvation of your souls, Jesus has accomplished the greatest thing that has ever been accomplished on the face of the earth, through his death, his burial, and his resurrection. Make the confession of him and be baptized for the forgiveness of sin. You need the encouragement of your brothers and sisters. I guarantee you that there are people here who are ready, able, willing to rush to your aid, to stand with you, to battle with you through your challenges. But we have to trust each other enough to make those challenges and battles known to each other. Which I guess, do we trust each other? You guys are looking at me like, I don't know. Come on, really? Do we trust each other? Yes, we do. Do you know why we trust each other? Because we believe in a God that is great and awesome. And I'm ready to rely on Him every minute of every day. And I pray that you will do the same. We're going to stand and sing a song. Justice has it. Burdens are lifted at Calvary. No truer statement can be made that when we lay our burdens at the feet of Jesus and at the feet of the cross, that they are lifted and we are able to experience His power, His grace, His mercy in our lives, not just as individuals, but as the church. Whatever we can do for you this morning, if you need the help of your brothers and sisters, if you're ready to become a Christian, however we can do this morning and help you, we encourage you to make that known by coming forward while we stand and sing.